why Learn Worlds has become such a standout in customer education. It gives you the flexibility to build training that feels like your brand, not like a boxed-in LMS template. And honestly, the analytics are some of the best I've ever seen. You get real insight into engagement, progress, and ROI without having to become a full-time data analyst. You can also chat with AI to immediately discover anything you want to know about your learner's progress, course trends, or revenue insights. Just ask it questions and let it pull that data for you. The integrations are smooth, especially if you're running HubSpot or automations across your stack. And the platform is actually enjoyable to use for both admins and learners, which I know sounds wild for an LMS. But here's the thing I appreciate the most. Customer education teams consistently tell us that LearnWorlds helps them move faster without relinquishing control. It is learning that scales alongside your product and business. And if you need to even train employees or partners, you can do it within the same account. Just create a new school and you are good to go. The platform is very user-friendly, so you are not relying on devs for changes that you might need to make, which gives you so much autonomy and flexibility. So if you're ready to upgrade your academy experience or rethink how you deliver product education, check out learnworlds.com today. And enter the code CELAB15 for 15% off the first 6 months of your subscription. Welcome everybody to CLAB, the Customer Education Laboratory, where what do? We explore how to build customer education, enablement, experience programs. I'm adding that intentionally. You'll see why soon. And experiment with new approaches that can exterminate the myths and all that bad advice we get from folks that just stops growth dead in its tracks. I'm your host, Dave Darrington. And today I'm really excited to have my dear friend, we worked together for years, Sean Ray. Sean, say hi to everybody. Welcome.
Thanks, Dave. So happy to be on here. Hello, everybody.
Thanks for joining me. We've had a little, you know, trying to cross the streams and haven't been able to get this to happen. And I've been looking forward to this for a really long time because it was just going back in the time machine a little bit. We met and worked closely together at Outreach. And it was a, it was a formative time for me. I imagine so for you, but I got a question before we start. We've got to do our fun, our International Day Of. So before the show, Sean and I sat down and looked at some options. So what, so of all the International Day Ofs today, what's your favorite? What's your pick for the day?
Look, the feel good one is the International Animal Rights Day. I feel like you'd be remiss if you didn't acknowledge that, right? We got to look after our fellow creatures here on this earth. And you gotta look after each other too. But those creatures are oftentimes more defenseless and get taken advantage of.
Yeah. And then the other one I spotted was, and we talked about this, the festival for the souls of the dead whales. Oh my god. Yeah,
hand in hand with animal rights there, right? It's like giving some homage to those beautiful creatures that just occupy so much space in the ocean.
Maybe I should, since I'm right here by the ocean, I should go out and just throw something into the Puget Sound here in Seattle. And I don't know, that's weird.
It's totally weird. Put some lilies out on the water.
Yeah. Do they enjoy your lilies? I don't know. I don't know.
Put some krill out there for them.
Let's do this. So this is a great homecoming for us. And today, Sean, like I mentioned in the intro, we started this podcast years ago, 7 or so now. It's hard to believe. With the intent of learning from our peers and our friends, and then going back and sharing that information in a different way, right? So everybody's like, well, you do the podcast. Like, yeah, you know, we did it because we can have this kind of conversational, you and I as friends and peers, and we work in the industry. We're working in a really hard industry. That is one that moves so darn fast that we can scarcely keep up. And there's so much involved in helping other people, whether, and like you, what I really valued about working with you at Outreach is you're one of the most, we use the word friendly, but it goes beyond that, a collaborative people where we saw opportunities to work. When I was doing customer education, you were slotted into the partner sales, like,
yeah, I think I was first doing the consultant gig when you showed up. I was helping consult revenue, sales, yeah, and operations teams, and then moved into enablement and really partnered up with that training and education team deeply.
Yeah, and that was much needed when you got there and you finally started to grind through it, because we'd had two enablement leaders prior to you getting in there, and you finally like got a hold of the beast, because we were dealing with things that I'm not going to try to bury the lead here, but we were already dealing with the formation of AI. We're reeling from COVID and having to pivot to learning and teaching our peers and helping work with people in a place where we couldn't go into our cool office down there in Elliott. Right.
That's right. It really did thrust us into the necessity of innovation in this way that we access and ingest learning.
Right. So let me frame it up as your background. So for the audience, Sean is a revenue enablement leader. I like how that's pivoted more, because we used to call it like sales and all that kind of stuff. Revenue enablement comes to the point of what we're trying to do. You have built programs for some of the most innovative teams in SaaS, like Outreach, Canva. You blend, what I like about this is you blend all the instructional design stuff, right? But with, and this is something I learned, so it was such a good thing to learn at Outreach, is the sales methodology, right? Systems, mm-hmm, thinking. How do you create and craft experiences that stick, whether you're doing onboarding or like me, customer education, or we're in this motif of go to market, right? It's how do we get performance? How do we like you enter the world as a passionate enablement leader, really grapple the beast down, help people with a strategic approach, right? And then have a fresh perspective that drives alignment. And it's so hard, because I keep thinking about customers are squishy, they're out here, and you've commonly been dealing with this enablement or this revenue team, this go-to-market team that like, oh, they got to do their job. They got to sell. Now, how are we going to get them to be excited about this AI tool that's coming along that they have to use and teach everybody about? So let's start there. Tell me a little bit more about yourself, what you've been doing, and then we'll go through some questions and break this thing down.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you're exactly right that there's so much that has changed over the last few years, and it's only going to accelerate. There's never been a slowdown, yeah, I think, in innovation since the industrial era, right? The revolution of industrialization has just expedited things. And we've seen as AI has come in as this new age of ways to revise and change the pace at which we're able to approach the work that we do. Everyone's still looking for those silver bullets. How do we make things go faster, better, with fewer resources? And how do we bring our machine learning and AI friends along for the journey in a way that maybe disrupts what we've done before, but is additive, right? It doesn't take away from the human aspect. I think that's a big question a lot of folks kind of ask too, is how do we keep it human? But enablement itself is going through a really massive shift with all this. And we used to think about training and content as really the core of the function. But a lot of the high performing mm-hmm. teams that I see today and that I've worked with, they really need something a bit different. They actually need clarity. So there's a couple of ways that I think about this, but ultimately I believe that they need an operating system for execution that helps to reduce friction. And they need learning that shows up exactly when and where the work is happening. And so I'm sure we'll unpack this a bit more, but I think that's really what gets me excited, is helping people to drive that clarity.
Well, let me pause you there. That, well, number one, when I was reading your notes, and like good podcasters, we always trade notes and have a script, and I'm reading through this and I see this and it just captures my attention. An operating system for execution that reduces friction. I've never heard it interpreted in that fashion, because where you went that intro for yourself is, what did we do for enablement before? Enablement is just like, okay, I'm a sage on the stage, I'm a SME. I think about, oh gosh, who was her name is on the tip of my tongue, when we were working at Outreach, she was in customer success, Shelby. Is that
right? Shelby.
I haven't talked to her for a long time, so I need to reach out. But she was in this, she was like our SME at one point.
Shelby's the OG of outreach, like one of the first people on that professional services team before it even was professional services. We were trying to figure out what the heck we were. And then really helped to lean in on that enablement side of the house too. But she was a pro, and she's over at Grammarly now, who's partnered up with Superhuman as well and doing phenomenal work over there, leading enablement teams of her own.
We'll flag Shelby and say hi, but I'm thinking about her because I'm going back to the time we were all together and I'm coming in trying to learn stuff, and I'm watching what you, Shelby, and others are doing from the enablement role. And that is such an important thing, because when I'm coming in, I wasn't in the sales capacity, but I had to learn how to be a salesperson. Outreach kicked me in the pants, and it did something to me that I never expected, Sean, which is I came out of that and I had to do sales for several companies, and folks are like, you're doing really good at this. And I go, you know what? I had some of the best help because I looked at your material, I looked at Shelby's material, it clicked. And we were in a place where we're focusing on that sales engagement, which for me, coming out of Gainsight prior to that, some integration platforms completely changed my thinking about go-to-market, right? And what are all the motions that we do? So let's go a little bit further than this. You're saying that organizations that understand this operating system context are winning more. So can you unpack that?
That's right. Yeah, they are. And just like how folks like outreach and that we're modernizing some of the go-to-market landscape, I think that there's more of that happening today as well, but we have to view it as more of an architecture, a revenue architecture. Got some friends over at Winning by Design who talk about this deeply and that I really admire, and I'm sure we'll talk maybe about some of their frameworks that I've employed over the years here as well. But those organizations that understand that revenue architecture and setting up the operationalization of their team's ability to execute are winning more and ramping faster, and they're executing their strategy with more consistency. And that's because they're driving that clarity for the reps. It's something that I think back to a framework from this book, Switch. I don't know if you've come around that.
Yeah, Dan and Chip Heath.
Wonderful book. In fact, Kara Blumberg from our time at Outreach was the one that introduced it to me when I first got into enablement. She said, look, enablement's a lot about change management, and this is a great way to understand some change management. And it really is, right? Enablement, as I laid up in there, it should be this operational system to reduce friction and execution, but it's also a catalyst for change, and change is hard for folks. And so one of the things that I learned from this book, Switch, that I think applies perfectly here is that they introduce kind of three surprises about change that I think describe enablement perfectly. Because when you think about organizations, what are we always dealing with? We've always got problems. Right, we've got lazy people. We've got people that just aren't doing what they should be doing. They resist the change that we're trying to bring to them. Well, these three surprises about change are that what looks like a people problem is often a situation problem, and what looks like laziness is often exhaustion, and thirdly, what looks like resistance is often just a lack of clarity. And so if enablement can bridge that gap, be a bit of a connective tissue in the strategic landscape of how we're getting our teams to perform within their functions with more clarity and excellence, I have found that those are the teams, those are the companies that are outperforming the others, hands down.
Okay, I'm going to go back and read this again. I have it on my shelf, right? And I remember, because actually Kara made that an assignment for us, I think, when...
I think it was her whole leadership team.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring this up, and it's very prescient right now, because and I'm glad you brought this up now, because I want to talk about more and then kind of come back to unpacking that. Here's something in my mind. I'm thinking about doing like this little, almost a set of cartoons, and doing it in a YouTube short or a TikTok fashion, where I communicate and imagine I'm thinking about Miro, right? A Miro board, and you're going slide to slide, and a little cartoon.
Yeah, you can say a Canva board too. They've got them great.
Yeah, no, I use Canva all the time. no longer with Canva, and we'll talk about that. Your next steps too. But what I'm trying to articulate now, and I have this vision in my head of kind of like, I was talking with Todd Kirk at Brainstorm. Brainstorm's a really interesting and powerful kind of enablement LMS, right? And it builds a bridge between, you mentioned change management. What I'm very interested in is finding this triangle of, okay, you are both in an enablement capacity, helping build the formative, what we say, how we think about the product we're actually selling, plus the meta of that, which is the behind the scenes pieces of that I will use that are set up custom, but I'm not going to tell that to a customer because this is my battle plan or battle card or whatever, things like that. And then there's that edge of, you talk operating system, but your operating system is constituted of this canvas of different apps. So I have this app and this app, but you have to learn these external apps to be do work internal, to do customer work external again. So it's all like that. This is why I'm wanting to spend a lot more time with you and others to unpack that enablement and learning is all part of the same fabric. But there are pieces of an elephant that we're trying to describe and we're blind, right? What we're talking about today is this, okay, what is the situation problem? What is that exhaustion? What is the lack of clarity? Where do these stem from? Well, maybe we need to back up a little bit and talk about where you're headed, right? You're talking about AI, right? And now we're at the precipice of this AI. I don't even know what the word is. It's an explosion. And we're dealing with the reality of it now, not the promise of it has passed. And now we're looking at, okay, AI first company. What is a CX company? What does this mean, Sean? Where are you headed and what's your vision and mission going forward here?
Yeah, so, along with what I've shared about what I'm kind of passionate about here, my mission I've articulated for several years now as trying to help others identify and achieve their most important goals. And so I've recently accepted an opportunity away from Canva to help go and do this with an ambitious and innovative AI for CX company called Intercom. And so what they're doing, they started off with customer service, customer support, and help desk software. And over the last year or so, they've introduced a new product called Finn, which is really that AI first driven approach towards CX software to be able to really help people expedite the way they're serving their customers and the experience their customers are having through their interactions. Uh-huh. And one of the things that really impressed me about Intercom is they were working with some of our current leaders in the AI space who are trying to understand how can they build things like this. They actually said, hey, look, we're not going to build it. We're actually going to purchase Finn, who is, you guys have built Intercom. You're doing this better and quicker than what we're doing right now within the context of what we're trying to accomplish with our customer interactions. And so you've got like Anthropic, for example, is one of those. And they've purchased Finn to be able to use because they could spin it up so fast. Now, it all has to do with context. I think that this is the big thing when you're talking about how does AI actually fit into this? It's all contextualization. How does that work within your workflow, within what you're actually trying to do? Because AI is now in everything, as we know, right? You accidentally slip a word and your AI assistant on your phone pops up and says, hey, can I help you out? It's everywhere.
Clippy. So
right now, give us Clippy back. No, but the modern Clippy is here. And it's not just in our Word doc. It's not just in our Google doc. It is everywhere. But we have to give it the context or have it exist within the context that's appropriate or relevant for our revenue teams, for our customers, to be able to ensure that we have the right kind of validating experience, giving them the tools and resources they need to perform at their best.
Okay. So let me pick that open a little bit. I'm not picking anything apart. You're dead on. So in my most recent experiences, one of the things that we were actively doing, and I was in a marketing organization, and our marketing team was taking an enablement approach on how to enable us. And it's, workshop here, go try this, go do this. And we were immersed in our own platform in a way that I scarcely ever do. I scarcely ever am in a company because of course, in the Atlassian framework and system, it's now AI is everywhere. It's insinuated itself in every corner of the application, so that, you know, I could be in the app on a screen in Confluence, highlight an area of what I'm doing and say, rewrite this, boom, it's done. Or I'm recording something in a Loom, and that Loom immediately transitions what we were talking about into a Confluence page, puts action items for people. I'm like, oh my gosh, like the process of digesting all that is, I think, where I'm trying to do it to say, use it, and then I've got to use this for my job, and then I've got to train people on it. Now, externally, you're in the thick of it right there with the, well, how do we even dog food this product? Right. And yes. But then it goes beyond. It goes beyond. It is not just dog fooding anymore. It's integrating with our, well, gosh, go back to one thing that I want to just focus more on is when you're talking about in the flow of work, that is the true key. And it's something that Adam and I and a lot of the peers in the customer education world that we've been living in made a manifesto. And that manifesto was like, it's basically like, be here now is one of the premises. In the moment, how do I help get you to where you're like, we've got a process, and that's the workflow that's right there. Yeah. And that's where we miss a lot of the times, because, well, let's think about training we've done in the past. Oh, okay, we're doing enablement now, blah, 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 blah. Talk for days. I didn't learn a damn thing out of that. Now I got to go back to my desk and use this thing. And because now I'm disconnected. But what I'm seeing is that with the Clippy thing, right? Like AI is there all the time. But now my mind is changing a bit to where I go, well, I can use this thing to go 10 times faster. I need information on this. It's going to Zoom Info or Outreach or Salesforce. Yep. It's just doing it for me. I talk to it like a human being who knows stuff. And that's been the hardest thing. It's, no, I can actually just say, I want to go look at my top accounts right now who are, look like they've got willingness to spend, who we haven't reached out to, who we want to know their value, we don't know what they really want. Let's go back to them and build a sales plan to connect with those. And here's how we'll do it. These are the things we need to learn to make sure that we're communicating. I don't know. I'm going too far, but
no, you're dead on here. I mean, that's what we've transitioned from, is from this classroom first experience, where whether it's in a literal physical facility where we're all together and we're just regurgitating information to you so that you understand that new product update, that new process you have to follow, whatever that thing is, or virtual instructor-led trainings, or video or documentation some way. We need to transition from that to more of that workflow-centric enablement delivery and customer education delivery, where the learning moves out of the classroom and into the workflow. What I mean by that is that, and I was alluding to this earlier when I said making things a little bit more human, like finding where's the human elements of this. I got my first glimpses of this when I was a sales rep using Outreach for the first time. Yeah. AI wasn't really prominent. The machine learning wasn't really there. But I was using systems and processes to reduce the amount of workload that I had to do, or cognitive load I had to use, to be able to do my job really well as an enterprise sales rep. And I could focus then my time by being better at the seller skills that only a human can do currently, right? Maybe there's some things, we'll talk about some cool tech that's out there that is getting better at this. But from that human interaction side, these kinds of conversations aren't really yet happening in a very natural or organic way with AI yet, right? You can talk with ChatGPT, but it's not organic. It doesn't feel that it's overly optimistic about the conversation it's having with you, and it doesn't really challenge you the way it needs to, your thinking. And so what we focus on now, what I'm moving away from, is just information dumps into trying to get these across to people's minds, and hopefully it translates into some performance. And now what I focus my time on more is, I can update a documentation in a place where AI can access it and then serve up that information as it's needed within the context of that seller or that customer success rep, or even a customer within the platform, within the product, and say, here's the thing it seems like you need to know within this appropriate relevance context. And let me give you that detail, that information that you might need. So it's serving up the bite-sized bits, what they need, when they need it, appropriate to the work that they're doing. And then from a revenue enablement side, I now focus my efforts less on the information dumps and more on the skilling side of things. How do we build up the skills that are needed of these humans that are going to take that information and apply it in a principled way across whatever work they're doing?
Wow. Yeah, you can't see it, but what's happening in my brain right now are all these things are, you know, reconnecting to the experiences that I had. And maybe you could, I wonder if you could play out, like roll a scenario out for me that, well, here's what I'm thinking of, Sean. When I was at Outreach again, some people give me some trouble about, you know, talking about history and where I've been. No, I'm going to lean in on this because it's really important. When I was in that moment coming into Outreach, I was overwhelmed. It was overwhelmed because now I'm like a little scared a little bit because now I'm in a world where I'm uncomfortable. This is where growth happens because I haven't worked with sales folks directly that closely ever. And yeah. Now I feel like there's a new, and it was hard at first because I'm like, oh, you got to sell. You're all about money. You know, like you have mm-hmm. those perceptions. And let me just roll with this for a little bit because I think this is actually more important to unpack. When I've always, in the past, history thought about, and my dad was a salesperson. He worked for Alcan Aluminum. He's really great at all this stuff. And he can just naturally sell you the shirt off. My mom would always like, he can sell you the shirt off your own back. And then after engaging and learning what these revenue-based functions do, and really getting into the nuts and bolts of the mechanics, like, okay, I'll talk about Outreach as a platform, because as you were talking, it was triggering the thoughts of, oh, this is where Kaya would have popped up, like yes. this battle card. And in that, I was like, oh, I can read it. Oh yeah, okay, Sean told me about this. It's right here now. And I know what to talk about. Hey, Sean, yeah, like when I'm telling, this product is really cool. And now I am teaching you, I'm sales. This was what really excited me. Because it flipped the script of, you know, the good salespeople were always the one that knew stuff.
Yep.
Right? That's and the bad people were the ones that you knew. I mean, anybody who's a SaaS veteran for a long enough time, like, okay, just stop. Who are you? What are you doing? I don't understand anything you're saying. I want to help you, right? Sell to me, but I don't understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, no matter how charismatic a seller is, it's going to be really hard to get anything across the line if they don't have the knowledge behind them to be able to answer the questions when they need to be answered, right? The people that have the knowledge about what the product is, how it's going to benefit the person, if they understand the company that they're talking to a deep enough right. degree, you know, the bottom line of what I get excited about is when I'm listening to calls of reps going through my coaching motions with them, and I hear a customer say, "Boy, it sounds like you've worked here. Like you, it sounds like you're embedded within our team." That means that the rep is doing a really good job of understanding that customer and the context of the buying journey that they're on. And you know, part of what I think about with this is how we need to be able to support our reps in getting there. You brought up Kaya. We have so many different tools that are out there, right? Kaya is the conversational intelligence aspect of Outreach. That when you're in a meeting, a virtual meeting with somebody, it's a little side panel that pulls up. And based on the conversation you're having, it's discerning, hey, they just talked about or asked a question about this competitor or right. this feature or function or pricing. And it listens, it brings up for that seller's eyes only, the ability to see what are the three bullet points I need to refresh myself on potentially to be able to have a really meaningful conversation and answer that question here and now. And so it's not about giving them all the information. It's what's the most important for that bit, right? For that question that's asked. And I think that that's where we need to transition into and where the best organizations are transitioning is let's get that kind of information in the workflows, the work streams of our reps. So whether that's in their CRM where they're living and updating notes and doing things like that, whether that's in their conversational intelligence platform itself when they're reviewing a call to get those notes out of it and see what was happening there, following the processes of creating a quote and all that, it it should live right there to say, it looks like you're trying to do this. This is the clippy bit, right? It looks like you're trying to do this, but not just, hey, it looks like you're trying to create a quote. It's, hey, I see that you're looking at this opportunity with this from this industry and these personas. Just, you know, when we phrase things in this way with those kinds of folks, we win 80% more deals when we do that. So use this bit of content, take this leave behind and drop it for them after this call, this step in your conversation with them, because it increases the likelihood of them continuing to engage with you. And ultimately, you know, from a revenue enablement side of things, we're looking at that outcome of sales, close one business.
Right. That was a transformative notion for me, Sean, when that helped me understand how to sell my own services, where I loved that environment that Outreach brought to me, that operating system, so to speak, because I was able to use the things that I was working with SDRs and AEs on in my day-to-day work too. And the thing that I really loved then is, you're talking about learning where you are. Well, if you've done a good job, I think, with enablement, you've given people a scaffold, understand the lay of the land. But now you're walking through this case, like I'm probably in the app, I'm looking through stuff, I'm seeing a couple of things, there's some flags that are tripping for the AI. It's telling me, hey, Dave, focus on this. And there's also that through line, and this is where you and I interconnect, that you are actually teaching as that sales rep in the moment to the customer. And this is the thing that this fabric of learning, I don't think people think about this enough. And this is why learning is a substrate layer of the entire organization.
Yes.
That it's all customer experience. I think I'll paraphrase my friend Samantha Murray on that. It's all moving towards customer experience, right?
Yeah.
All of these conduits where you're working and I'm working, in something that we were talking about, leave behinds. Well, that could have been in my case, like we had made snippets and templates and all these things. You could, like, the rep could immediately drop this little piece of copy that's already been vetted, but that includes the 101, right? This is what this does. Or, hey, Sean, I know you asked me a question about what would I need to do to go through integrating, because now we're in the sales deal cycle. You know, we're going to have to get a solutions architect or, you know, a sales engineer to next. But here's a document that explains what happens, what needs to be done. Yeah, if you're comfortable with this, you can even do it yourself, but we also have people that can help you. So you're learning and you're instructing. You've got to learn. You've got to help your... I think this is what I was trying to get to, is that there's so much learning that happens in that sales cycle at so many different places, but we don't think of it like that.
Yeah.
And that was my takeaway, is that you know, the sales team that you have are some of the best educators that I've ever seen. Do you ever feel like your product team ships faster than you can build training? Yeah, me too. And that's why I've been checking out what the folks at LearnExperts are doing. Their AI platform called Leah takes your existing content, docs, slides, wikis, recordings, and turns it into full training programs, publishing in multiple modalities to nail blended learning for your customers 85% faster than traditional methods. And get this, when your product updates, Leah can update the content faster by automatically incorporating it into your existing outline, content, and even your end of course test or exams. LearnExpert shares that their customers are reporting 90% efficiency here. Now that's time back to actually focus on strategy, or let's be honest, to finally take a lunch break. Plus, it connects with platforms like Skilljar and others so that you can publish straight to your academy without missing a beat. Check it out at learnexperts.ai/CELab and see how you can keep your learning and test in release mode. LearnExperts, build like an expert, update like a pro.
That's great. I love to hear that. I think you're exactly right that we have to not think about it as these siloed compartments that we operate within when you're thinking about customer education, sales enablement, whatever the next thing might be. These are all interconnected pieces, right? And when you think about it in silos, you're going to operate in silos, your outcomes are going to be siloed, and you're not going to magnify the impact that you're trying to create. For a business in today's world, you need to be able to break down those silos. I think AI helps us to do that a lot. I think it can. I think it's fundamentally a shift we have to make in our perceptions and our paradigms. But AI can really help to become that layer that creates personalization at scale across all of our different bits and bobs that we're working on together.
Personalization at scale. That's one of the holy grails, right?
It is.
Let's talk about, let's pivot our conversation. I don't know if you want to talk about the dirt man thing. I just have to say that again, but what were we talking about? It was one of the fun, it was like a YouTube video you shared with me.
Yeah, this is one of those things, you know, I'm a little bit obsessed when I have some downtime with just scrolling through the brain dead scroll of Instagram reels or YouTube shorts or whatever it might be. And a little while back, you know, there was a pretty viral video. It's a guy's named Carter Vale or something like that, but he created this 30-second little song called Dirt Man that I was obsessed with, right? You know, leave a little dirt under your pillow for the dirt man so he doesn't take you down to his lair underground. It was just goofy, silly. It just, it's catchy. I sing it all the time with my kids now and they think it's a crack up. That's right. I mean, there's Disco Snail out now. You know, there's all sorts of different little, you know, kitschy little songs that are on these platforms. But Dirt Man, when I was watching it during that time when you and I connected, we're connecting over burgers at that joint, right? And,
I gotta go back there.
And it was so good, man. But I had just gone through this phase where every other reel I was looking at was Dirt Man or Dirt Man remixed in some way, or you know, some variation of it. You know, a Dirt Lady version. You know, there's like different versions of this thing, and it made me think about like this is what our end users, our customers, our sales reps, they need these kinds of things where you get different versions of this depending on what you need. What am I interested in? What track am I going down? Let the algorithm kind of feed me more of what I need when I need it.
The algorithm. Okay. I caught the thread on that now, but it's cool. It's like a meme for learning, and that if we can have more of those bite-sized juicy nuggets, that they're connecting us in the moment of time where, oh, no, I get that. Or, hey, there's this little mnemonic or there whatever that we can help to connect us to the work in the time that we're doing it.
Yeah, that's it, man. It's just bring me what I need when I need it. And you can tell what I need based on, you know, in the world, there's trends and music and all that stuff. And that's why Dirt Man pops up on my feed. But in our working environment, there are other trends that are happening, right? We've got seasonality to our business. We've got different ebbs and flows in the market that we need to pay attention to. And that if we're not keen on that, AI can be. It can help feed into us like, hey, around this time of year, around this time of month, or around this industry, you should be thinking about this thing. Bring it up to me in the right way, in the right time.
Okay. I'm going back to that burger and that discussion, and I'm thinking beyond that now, Sean. So is it what you're saying that, okay, I'm doom scrolling, I'm in my bed, you know, I'm looking through the things, and you said one word or two words, the algorithm. Yeah. So something I'm kind of obsessed with, and let's just work out loud for a minute, is that hold that idea, right? We need something that's algorithmically working for us on some kind of a feed, some kind of a channel that I go to. This is something that has, okay, I'll give you a story about some recent work. One of the most recent things that I've been involved in is this whole video-based learning influencer motivated, right? It's led by somebody that I'll mention Kevin from my former team made this Atlassian Answered series, really tight content, really small, YouTube short worthy, right? It was a little bit bigger than that, but where we were headed is thinking about, well, how can we inject this into TikTok? And people are like, well, why would you do that? TikTok's for doom scrollers. Like, no, I got a lot of news and information and interesting stuff off of it. And there's a STEM channel that's amazing. I find Christmas gifts, you know, probably wasting too much time on there. But the point being is that why are we not seeding, like having some kind of conduit? I will look at TikTok all the time. Why can't I see intercom stuff up there? But it has to be different. It's a now it's a fun kind of entertainment-y driven learning. Yeah.
I get this all the time. My algorithm has pointed me to the 30 minutes to President's Club, I think is what it's called, or 30 seconds to President's Club, something like that, where it's these short bits of like best sales tips. And oh, geez, I get, yeah. Well, yeah. Mark Cosaglow, right? The original yep. seller at Outreach, who ended up going on becoming our head of sales for a time there, led us from, you know, what up to our $4.4 billion valuation point, and just had a wonderful experience there. He shows up on my feed every once in a while now with this, right? And we get it based on who we're following. You know, you see in the comments, this is the algorithm I built, right?
Yeah.
But it's listening to you. It sees what you're doing. I want to translate that to another way though, too, because you've got it where we can ingrain or embed ourselves where people are. I think that's one thing that's really important. But I think we also can make sure that we're integrating ourselves into these spaces in a way that's listening and learning to them and giving them what they want. I've navigated away from push content as much and moved more into pull content. So push meaning I'm mandating you need to read this document, you need to read this process update, you need to read this product change and all that. I'm going more into a pull where it's based on what they need, what they want. And one way I did this at Canva was we were using a knowledge management system where we would just fill it with great documentation. We didn't worry as much about structure or form, which we used to. We used to be very concerned from an instructional design perspective about how is this going to be perceived when they go and read through it? How do I order this? AI actually doesn't care as much. It's got some structure to it, obviously. We've got some prompt engineering, different things with that. But what it does really good is parses through data and helps pull out the most important things for the context of the query that's coming its way. And so I integrated our knowledge management system with Slack, where our teams were living already, put it into a few channels to test it out first. Product marketing was one of the first channels I put it into because we were getting questions from our team member all the time about, what can the product do this? A customer just asked me if we can do that. It's functionality-based questioning, right? Very simple. And we built a whole lot of documentation on that on our website and in our knowledge base around the product capabilities, how that works with different pricing and packaging that we have. And instead of having to sit in Slack and wait for a PMM to come in there and answer the question, now our knowledge management system was with its AI agent was answering that immediately. Right. It's not having to be pushed to them of like, hey, make sure you understand all the documentation we've created around the product. No, I mean, you need to know a certain fundamental degree of the product and all that. But don't worry about all these nuances unless you're dealing with them all the time. Let the agent answer your questions when you need it. The question comes up, punch it in and you're going to get a response. And it's not just maybe this is right, but it's verifying that link out to the documentation where you could expound on what you just heard in the snippet.
That was what I was going to ask next. It's okay. I got a little, directionally AI is pushing me at this. Oh, I get it. And now I really appreciate and respect how you've talked about that, you know, the pull versus push, because I think that's the foundational change or switch that we've had in learning, which it's been, you absolutely do need to do some learning in before everything that you get onboarded, you're starting to do some basics, you're connecting the dots, right? But in the moment, that doesn't serve me anymore. And I think this has been one of the biggest foundational issues with learning as it applies to SaaS and business, that the speed of learning is not fast enough because it's a web of knowledge that you have, just like you've pasted this tapestry together. I've got a knowledge base. How is a knowledge base part of learning? Oh, good God, right? Are we going to go there? It's all the tools that we have available to us are involved in learning. From you and I, we're different experientialists trying to grapple that knowledge and use it and leverage it in a certain time, in a certain cadence or sequence of events. Here, now I'm in the flow of work. Oh my gosh, I need something. I go to Slack. Now I'm not walking over to the cube next to me and saying, Sean, can you look? I'm busy. You know, we're the speed of work needs that facile nature of people being able to get the information what they need in the moment. And then the learning journey is what's interesting about that, because we've pivoted to a classroom, sit your butt down, learn this damn thing, and then you're gone, you're good. You'll remember everything. No, you won't. To I'm learning bits and pieces. When I need them, they're there. Or maybe there's a
sequence. As I'm applying it. Yeah.
Right. As you're applying it, you're unpacking. So the process of learning never stops.
Yeah. And it deepens that learning. It's more contextual. It's more relevant, and it deepens that learning, right? And just like you said, you when you sit in a classroom, you're not going to retain even 80% of that when you walk out of the classroom if you're not applying it. I forget what some of the adult learning stats are on this, but within a certain time period, very short time period, if you don't go and apply that learning is gone. It's down to like 15% retention or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Well, Ebbinghaus curve, it's like 90 in one day, you lose
10%
of what you've learned.
Yeah. And so you have to find ways to help get around the obvious bottlenecks of knowledge retention here. And part of it is stop with the information overload to the person and give them what they need from the foundation's perspective. But then let's use the tooling to be able to give them the right information when they need it. This is part of that clarity, right? That the resistance to all the information coming in, it's not because they want to resist, it's because it's too much. Number two, what looks like laziness is often exhaustion. We are exhausted from information overload. There's too much to learn at any given time and for us to retain and apply it.
Yeah, I like that a lot, because we even wrote it into our customer education manifesto as well, which was, you know, the people are busy, right? They need stuff in the time of need. They're not going to learn this stuff. What we've learned over the past even decade in learning and enablement and customer education, all these fields, is that we can't do things the old school way. Right. And now we have all these. Let's seg over to talk about some tools. We talked about operating stuff, but part of our operating system is a tapestry of technology where I'm curious to hear. I'll add some new ones in that I've been talking to folks about. I'm curious to hear what your stack has been looking like over the years as far as, you know, your product. Now, these are other products you're using day to day to help enable your teams. What have you been working with?
So obviously, I think every company is going to want to dog food their own stuff. So like you would have seen, Atlassian is going to want you to use all the Atlassian suite pieces. Canva wanted us to use all the Canva pieces, and Outreach wanted us to use as much Outreach as we could, right?
Right, right.
But there's definitely outside of that, and even outside of just CRM, there are a lot of different tools out there that I think are heading the right direction. I'll say I think there's still a lot more room for innovation here. People have not yet hit the mark that I would feel very comfortable with saying that we are there. We are at the point where I feel very comfortable with this this future that I maybe have painted about everything being AI served in the right context and having all that. But there are folks like Speckit who are doing a pretty good job with this. I do kind of think of it as a little bit more of enhanced tool tipping. But it lives in more than just that little information bubble outside of your field in the CRM. It can live and exist in other places and contain a lot better information. Clicking out to the learnings that might be needed if you got that. You got GTM Buddy is another one that I'm really keen on how they might improve as well. But this is sitting within one of the places I live in most, which is my email and my calendar. I'm in there all the time, and it can see, hey, I'm going to have a meeting with Dave, who is the chief revenue officer over at CE Lab, right? And based on that industry and based on Dave's persona, here's the kind of conversation I might want to review to prep 5 minutes ahead of my meeting with him. Just a quick dialogue there about company specs and all that. Boom, contextual about the meeting I'm about to have. I'd be remiss if I didn't call out Gong. They are doing crazy things right now in the space. They've gone alongside Outreach in the competitive space with conversational intelligence. They are still dominant there, but they've come into the sales engagement space. They've come into the forecasting space. They're getting into AI role play now in coaching, which is really cool. They're getting into some other things too, account and contact information gathering. So competing more with the Apollos of the world, as well, the Zoom infos, all of that. So getting into that space, those kinds of tools are still going to be necessary to be able to get the details you need. But I'm really keen on things like OneMind. This, I can't remember if I brought it up earlier, but OneMind, I saw this at a conference about a year ago, a Pavilion conference based in Austin here. And I was presenting with Winning by Design, and the CEO of OneMind is Amanda, who was the founder and CEO at Sixth Sense. And and if you know Sixth Sense, they've done phenomenal work in intent-based buyer signals and really helping on the demand gen side of the house. OneMind is meant to be this AI assistant that's on a call with you, or it can actually take sales calls for you. It can be your SDR or your solutions consultant, and it is starting to close deals by itself. It's an avatar, just like looking at, and you know it's an avatar. You're not pretending that it's not, right? It's not one of those where they're trying to spoof you.
Uncanny Valley ones.
But this is a great way to scale out some of your foundational sales pieces, your sales motions, shifting your human talent to more nuanced deals and strategic conversations that need to happen that can currently only happen human to human. But they're also able to do things like AI role playing for sales coaching. I've gotten off of my sales call. How did that go? Maybe Gong can interpret it. I think this is where Gong is going in this end too, of like, hey, you did pretty well here. Your talk time was kind of high though. Let's focus on how we can maybe ask more questions and do some active listening. And let's see how you can respond to that. Boom, spin up a role play consistent with the scenario that you just finished off of that sales call. And let's nail down those skills, those very human skills that you need to tighten up.
Jeez. That's, Gong is very interesting. Because I've even used it for trainers to help them, you know, okay, did you're talking too much here, and you really need to bring some of the, you know, get participants in your course.
Yeah, how are we getting the others off the mic, right, from a training perspective?
Right, that's actually been a really hard thing for me, because the sage on the stage thing is real. I would always just talk too much. I'm like, no, let's have somebody explain their scenario. What about your learning platform, an LMS? What are the tools do you use for enablement, even internally, or what do you use for developing your content so that it fits these new platforms that you're working with?
Yeah, I'm gonna answer that, and then I'm gonna say something a bit controversial that the pitchforks and torches might come out. I've evaluated and implemented different LMSs for our internal training perspectives and external as well. WorkRamp is one that continues to be kind of at the forefront of that space. I've used SkillJar in the past. I've used HighSpot as well for this. Evaluated things like SalesHood and MindTickle from a sales and revenue enablement perspective. Yeah, and they've got some great features and functionality there. I will say WorkRamp's the one that I kind of keep leaning back into a bit. They have a lot of those key functionality that you really need to be able to get your learning organized, and they integrate pretty well with some of our authoring tools that are out there. And there's a whole lot more. I know that this is a space you're a little bit more aware of, but those AI driven authoring tools that can create the content for you and put it into the system that you're in. I mean, Parda, I think, is one that you and I have. We've talked with them recently.
I work with Andrew a lot. It's awesome.
Yeah, cool concepts, right? And their goal is not necessarily to be an LMS, but to be the right authoring tool to create amazingly engaging content and put that into the system that you're using. So that's where I've been, what I've been using, and how I think about that a little bit. But my controversial statement is that I actually think the LMS needs to die.
I was on a call and we were talking about this very topic once again just the other day.
And it's die is harsh, right? It needs to evolve. We need to move past the static learning content.
Definitely.
We need to move away from that. I love video-based content, but it has to be sharp and dynamic. It can't be something that, unless it's a truly evergreen topic, in evergreen meaning it's going to last 6 months or more, we shouldn't be spending all this time creating and managing content that's just going to fade away. We can focus more, as I was saying earlier, on let's document the materials. And if you've used like Notebook LM, you can take that content, feed it into there. And what one of the things I was doing at Canva was we'd spin up podcasts based on that. And it's the AI podcast hosts that are having to chat with each other about the most recent conversation. And they're referencing previous foundational things from our revenue methodology that we've rolled out to the teams and saying how it integrates in there. But hey, there's this new feature update and let's talk about it within that context. The dynamics of that have changed drastically. And I think that current LMSs are not there. The ones that I've explored, maybe I need to be more informed and I'm not necessarily opening my door up to a whole bunch of sales pitches, but that's, I do want to see someone that is bringing that to our current state. I think it's still in the future.
Yeah. I will mention a couple that you might want to check out. One of them, I just recently, I met at a Seattle meetup for learning professionals. There was like Microsoft and Databricks and all these different companies. Yeah. I was hosted by Uplimit, and I'll just say hi to Zaid out there. I'm going to talk more, but they've to me bridged this enablement and customer learning in an interesting way. So we want to learn more about that. Arist was another platform that is in that enablement space. Other tools that are kind of generalized are, there's one called Sunday Sky, I thought was really interesting, which allow you to do a lot more video kind of on the fly, but make these really informative, but, you know, kind of leaning into training, but not really. And then there's from the development platform, of course, there's Cluso, Party mentioned in their sponsor here at C-Lab. Another one you may want to check out is Learn Experts, which is a really efficient platform. It takes that Google work, you know, the Notebook LM type motif, but then extrudes the instructional design expertise and builds that into the platform itself. So that as an instructional designer, or if you're not one, right, I'm an accidental instructional designer that picked it up because I had to for my job. Right.
Same. Yes.
Yeah. But these platforms, the Learn Experts, I did a whole episode just recently. So folks can check that out with Sarah Sedgman, who's the CEO. But it imbues all of that into the content, allows us to rebuild and make that content again in different kinds of forms, right? Really efficiently. So we're seeing this synthesis right now of, okay, we've got these platforms. I'm looking at it as kind of like this omni-channel bifurcation of content, where if going back to the thing that you were talking about with the knowledge, what I'm starting to see and what I saw threads and tendrils at within Atlassian is we need to break down all of our content in a way that is just kind of being updated. And that update in the moment is from anybody. You see something that's wrong, you update it. I see something in a wiki or a knowledge base, I update it. And we're doing that all the time. Then there's tools out there like Vidiate, for example, or Cluso, which can generate video on the fly. Vidiate can do a template where you feed in a script and now it logs into your app and it does all the things. And that can be a process that's run in engineering, right? So as things are being updated and going through the build process, it's spitting out a new video, putting that in a CR or CMS, because we had a CMS that stored all that video and all the, basically where content is now, I'm seeing is going to be able to be shepherded and come together in all these different ways, some without our intervention.
Yeah, right? I think that's exactly where it needs to go, is more of that way where that information comes together and it can spit out the type of information that we want in the format that we desire. We know that we have a whole bunch of different learning styles, right? I'm one of those that's like probably a borderline ADHD kind of guy where I need to be able to hear it, watch it, and read it all at the same time. Like I need to experience it. I need that tangible, can I do something with it? Especially if I can do a physical activity with it in some kind, worksheets or you know, building thing, excuse me, building things together and plugging all that together physically. Those different learning styles, it's super difficult to make as one-off pieces individually today. I can't go and, as an individual contributor on a team, go and make all of those different variations. But if I have tools that can scale out the ability to do that, let me feed it what it needs from the information perspective, the documentation perspective, and that it sets out the tone for all of those different variations of instructional delivery. That is where I think the future is. And then Dave, you come in and say, hey, I just need a quick video on this. Give me a quick video. Or, hey, I want a podcast on this thing. Hey, I want a quick read. I want to sit here and while I'm going through, I need a summary email of all these kind of updates so I can get little snippets that I can read through real quick.
Or even
deliver
it
to me in the way I need it. Yeah.
You know, like I've seen that where one of the things that the recent additions to Confluence at Atlassian was you could do the summary of pages with Rovo where you say, hey, I created an agent, and that agent synthesized all of the things that I've got in my Jira backlog, in my meetings and whatever, and then it will actually read that. So I could be in the car, click the button, and it's just reading through all this stuff as I'm commuting. That a lot.
Yeah.
But that's, you're hitting on all of those things that are moving us into the next generation. I don't know what that is, 21st century learning. Again, this goes back to the thing that I'm struggling with is this. We're kind of, and this is a word or a phrase I've made up. So if anybody else out there claims it, I claim it first, agentic learning. Because what you're saying is that there's agents and like looking and listening and watching all the time and they're at our side and that know us. And as I'm in building an LLM about Dave or Sean, who has these, like I liked how you say tell me, show me, let me try. You know, this is the standard convention for any kind of foundational learning experience. And that now has to take, okay, when am I going to do that? How am I going to sit down and actually learn this thing? Oh, I've got a new platform and I have to actually use this for my darn job. And my boss is screaming at me, I've got to do this credential. All these things are coming at us all the time. And that's why you and I might be at different ends of the spectrum in a way, but we're really not. If we can break down all that content and feed it to agents, validate it, vet it, and then make transformational experiences for learning out of all of this stuff, then we're going to survive. How do we survive?
That's right. Well, and this is where I think the crux of our existence within this sphere comes into play. We have to be able to be the strategic levers that says what we do and why.
This episode is brought to you by Parda.io. Parda is a next generation authoring platform built for customer education. Okta, Personio, Miro, Writer, and many other fast-growing companies rely on Parda to stay in sync with product updates, build customer learning experiences, and manage content at scale. With Figma-style collaboration, granular branding, built-in localization, an AI assistant, seamless skill jar integration, and more, Parda lets you scale customer education the way it should be, fast, flexible, and collaborative. To learn more, check them out today at parta.io/clab. That's parta.io/celab.
If we're letting the AI determine exactly what our strategy is or why we're doing things, I'm a big Simon Sinek fan, by the way, right? Start with why. AI cannot tell me what my mission is. AI, it didn't exist 7 or 8 years ago when I was constructing my little mission statement of helping others identify and achieve their most important goals, right? AI didn't write that for me. That was my mission statement. There's a reason I've latched onto it. It's because it's deeply me. It's what I want to do, and I can do it wherever I'm at, whether it's in my professional environment, whether it's in my family, whether it's in my church service, wherever it might be. And I can accomplish that. And I think that's where we as humans actually can excel best, because we need to look at the breadth of what we're trying to do as a business and say, this is our vision. This is where we're going to go, and point the tooling that we have, all the wonderful agentic learning assets and things to the vision, to that mission. Otherwise, it's unbound and it's going to go haywire and it can't really give us what we really need. You have to define the parameters. And so the position I try to put myself in that I think that a lot of us could put ourselves in better is in that architecture model or the seat of the architect, to be able to say, here is the blueprint for why I'm doing what I'm doing, or why we are doing what we're doing. And instead of just random acts of training, now we're building the capability around that mission, the customer journey, you know, exactly what behaviors matter at what stage, and then measure whether you're executing against that strategy appropriately, or if you're drifting, and for us to be able to align that to our mission and why we're doing what we're doing, is super important. I think that's where the human element of this comes in, where we make ourselves irreplaceable.
Yeah. Thanks for articulating that so well, Sean, because that whole dialogue needs to be summarized, distilled, and shared with every executive out there. That what I'm seeing is, let's just AI do stuff. No, we have to be there in the experience and in working with the customers, and the human side has to be there. And it's now we're leveraging all of this great, it's almost like now you have all these agents and things that can do things for you. And I'm taking the shift of like, well, these are kind of like, I don't want to, like, angels or something to stay in a positive tone. They're out there, they're giving me information and feeding me and helping me and guiding me. And it's almost like I have this cloud around me now that's forming, that, but I'm still there. And it does service to me, right? And it helps to lift me up as an educator, enabler, to make, like, I've got more tooling. I don't need the same kind of people. I need all those people doing the same thing I'm doing, right? It's a different world, but let's go deeper here, because you talked about revenue architecture and architectural stuff.
Yeah.
And I think this is a great way to kind of wrap up and wrap things together. I like it, expand upon that more, because number one, I mean, when I first heard the term revenue enablement, I'm like, what's this now? We got a new one. It's not different palpably. It's different in implementation, I think. Can you dive into that a little bit more? I want to learn about this from you.
Yeah, I think that enablement started to encroach on customer education at some point, where it was like, well, let's just differentiate by customer education is this external facing training arm, and enablement is this internal facing training arm. Right. And, you know, you and I had this conversation. I've had it with almost every customer education colleague of mine as well. It's like, let's not fight against each other, work against the grain on this. We're building similar content. Let's work together on it, and let's reuse what you're building, what I'm building, and just shift it to the context of the audience.
Right.
From a revenue architecture perspective, I think this is where enablement fits in actually a little bit more naturally. It sits within an operational perspective a lot of times, but what we're thinking about is the one that I use the most, again, is winning by design from a methodology perspective, and how mm-hmm. this is employed. They use revenue architecture as kind of their language in this, and that's where I'm borrowing that from. But their model, it forces us to think beyond just that original funnel. If you think about that verticalized funnel, you have inputs, you have outputs, and that's kind of where it stops. What revenue architecture is looking at is the whole customer journey. They actually flip the funnel onto its side, if you will, and then add an outgoing funnel. So what used to be the exit of a new customer, an acquisition, now is this customer retention, expansion motion that is really, they consider it the profit center of an organization. And there's a good reason for that, right? It's a lot more expensive to acquire a customer than it is to retain and expand one, but it takes a lot more effort. And in this way of providing meaningful value, when there are, you know, vast numbers of companies spinning up every day with new AI functionalities or being born out of AI. And so how do you do this? It's actually about that same need for clarity that our reps and our customers need, that same level of clarity, the same messaging consistency and the same reinforcement rhythms post-sale now that sellers need pre-sale. And what I've employed alongside this is the strategic enablement framework. Again, a framework that I'm not originated this thing. These are things that I think are based on principles. So they're not stuff that's going to ebb and flow with time. They're ones that can be timeless, used anywhere in any situation. And High Spot actually is the one that originated this model. But what you do is you're starting with the end in mind. Age old principle, right? Age old thing to say.
Yeah.
Begin with the end in mind. What we might call that is business outcomes. Uh-huh. What are the business outcomes we're actually trying to achieve? Again, our strategic architectural minds, we can determine that. Our AI is not going to determine that for us, because there are a lot of why driven factors that are behind that. What's our why? So we need to determine what are the business outcomes we actually want. And I'm not just talking about more revenue. I'm talking, let's get into details here. What are we actually trying to do within this organization? And when you understand what your business outcomes are, then you can start feeding it into appropriate calls to action.
Right.
When you define what those calls to action are, those are the skills, the knowledge, behaviors that we would expect of the rep, of the customer, whatever it is that they might need, that we would then frame the training or coaching around. And so when we've identified, is it a skill? Is it a behavior? Is it knowledge? Is it a mixture usually of some of each of those? We build the training assets and what they might need, the documentation. This is where we can get fancy with the AI, right?
Yeah.
Let the AI help us to build this, to author this, to create it in the way that's going to be the right mode for the recipient. And then we deliver that and we coach to it. And the coaching, these are like these micro learnings that can happen along the way. This is where I was mentioning before about on Gong. You know, if it hears on that call that you just had, that boy, you didn't really ask any questions. You just talked the whole time. Let's focus on that. Let's work on that as a skill. It can present to us, here's a coaching need. But from an enablement perspective, this is where myself, and I work with my sales managers typically on this end, as well as we become the coaches. We listen to these calls and we train to those in one-on-ones, in group settings, small group workshops where we do that. That's the kind of content that the instructor-led or facilitated training really becomes impactful. And when we do that, then we analyze, how is this impacting some of the efforts that we were hoping for? Those leading and lagging measures, are they being influenced by this effort that we're putting out there, aligned to those calls to action? Is that now impacting the business outcomes that we determined? That becomes a cycle. And you can put this in the form of impact sprints. I've done that before, where we do it over the course of a couple of months, where we really hyper-focus on a couple of skills, key skills, behaviors, knowledge, what we need there. And we lay into that until we feel that we're at the right spot of mastery. And you rinse and repeat that model through whatever the context is of what your business needs are.
Yeah, and you're also with revenue in mind, you're also under kind of different forces than, you know, like if I was pure customer learning, it's one thing. It's what does product do? What are you trying? How do you use this thing really? But what you're trying to do is say, well, we're zigging this way, and we really need to sell this new platform we've got, or we need to get more seat count or whatever, but you've got a target in mind. Now you can pivot over time to get people those skills around those things. And you're countering a couple of different challenges at the same time. One of them is just, okay, I've got a new green salesperson who doesn't really know the craft that well. And we know from, you know, practical experience that a lot of people get into sales because of their characteristics and their nature, and you know, there's things that they don't know and that has to come up. But then there's that always on learning, where I don't think we've ever really had it like this before, Sean, where I can go and look at Gong or Zoom and go, okay, was I talking too much? Or was, but then it was more like, I remember using Gong for trainers in outreach, and it was very interesting because we were trying to balance certain indicators that we're setting up to affect the learning outcome. And it had such a strong connect to what you were doing, because that same kind of pattern, like we're trying to dog food our product and we're also now setting best practices.
Yeah.
So, oh my gosh, there's so much more going on now in this space. tools, talents, approaches, but I think you're setting a high mark for what you can expect to see. We've covered a lot in this. I think this is a good natural point to wrap up. You know, we're at an hour and hour plus, which is that's always a good sign for an episode. We might have to break it into two. But is there anything else on your mind or things that you would like to reach out to people? The caveat I'm making here is that we're expanding our audience to enablement and experience and all of that. So look at CE as being customer experience or whatever too. What are other things? What is anything that's caught your attention or some tip you want to share as we're walking out the door?
Yeah, I would just say that this is in this age of innovation, there are tried and true principles that we should still hold ourselves to. And I've talked about some of those there. I think one of the biggest ones that often gets left out is accountability. We must be accountable for a lot of different things, right? But in the context of our businesses and how we perform, we should be first, hopefully, accountable to ourselves of our own expectations and standards. But we need to hold those kinds of expectations of our teams as well and have accountable. Yeah. If we say we're going to do something, did we do that? Did we actually achieve the results? Did we put in the effort? Did we learn the knowledge? Did we demonstrate the skills? If we didn't, something's broken in there, and we shouldn't just say, well, let's dismiss it, unless you've determined that strategically it's no longer aligned, but it's the accountability action. I find so many organizations miss the accountability layer. They talk so much about acting, but they don't follow up on, did we do it? And how well did we do it? And so that is just so key. And that coupled with these other principles that we're talking about here, I think regardless of the next stage of our information and AI age that we're in, those things will always exist. They always have existed and they always will exist. And we need to break down those silos that we talked about earlier, reach out across the line and say, we may do things for different audiences, but we're trying to effectively do the same thing. Let's see how we can learn from each other. One of the greatest things I got from my career in enablement that helped solidify the fact that I wanted to be in enablement was actually talking to some of your instructional designers and in the training side of the house, talking with them about how they do what they do. They taught me the models like with Addy and some of their, how they go about doing analysis and how they focus on the end so that they can build the means to that end. Breaking down those barriers between these different modern go-to-market resources, human resources here, is I think something that can't be overstated. So, that's what I'd probably leave with you and the audience here.
That's endearing. I love that because we have a lot to learn from each other and collaborate together. The more we do so, the faster we can move. And I think something you said triggered in my mind that one of the things that I've been pursuing in learning about SaaS, at some point I really would like to write a book or something about it. And I call it just learning SaaS. We move so much faster and we have to change so quickly. And it's not like you're going to learn physics or chemistry or English. There's no book. We're flying by the seat of our pants a lot of the times, but we're not. We have a really strong community of practice and a lot of people that know stuff that's changing every day. So with that, I want to thank you for this. This is everything I could have hoped for, Sean. This is the discussion that we wanted to have when we were talking in the burger joint in Austin down there.
Well, thanks, Dave. I really enjoyed myself.
Yeah, this has been great. So on the way out the door, you want to learn more? We have a podcast website at just customer.education. It's a great domain. You can find all notes, other episodes, everything you want there. We're also part of the greater customer education, and I would say broader customer experience community. And hey, we're out there to help, help you learn, connect with you. We want to hear your ideas and more. In fact, if you're looking to talk about things that you've learned and want to share with the world, come join us in C-Lab. You can find a nice link and it's really easy. I'm out there on LinkedIn and so is Sean. So reach out to Sean and say hi and thank him for his time here. Special thanks to Alan Coda for our theme music. And if this helps you, please think about subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your flavor of podcatcher, and leave us a positive review. Really helps us out. Share with a friend. And we thank you very much for joining. Get out there, educate, experiment, enable, and find your people. Thanks, everybody.